I
pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, roll call. Everybody's here.
That was kind of bad.
Okay, citizen input is next. Any citizens that would like to address the council on council issues, you'd raise your name, or raise your hand, sorry. Acknowledging you can come up to the podium and then give us your name and address, and you have up to 5 minutes to address the council. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to address the council? No? Yes? Guess not. Okay. Rodney, go ahead and come up to the podium right here and give us your name and address, and then you can address us.
You want the address?
Yes, please. Your name and address.
My name is Rodney DeLeon here in Othello, Washington. And my address is on 1200 block. And I just came here to discuss the parking area I got on the front of my gas station. I'm going to sell my gas station to my son, and I'd like to move all my stuff, like my trucks and my tractors, on that lane, that lot. And because I'm moving over here, I bought a house over here close to this area over here. I'm buying a house there, and I want to move over there. And I'm just going to be working as anybody needs to do electrical or something, I'm going to be doing that. And my gas station, I'm going to sell it out to my son. He's going to take it over there and do maintenance there and everything. And he's going to do, I'm going to let him have this other property so he can, if he's going to work on trucks and everything and cars there, he can park them in that area. That's one. I'm going to find out if it's okay with you people. And I want to park all my stuff on the other lot. If you guys, I got two backhoes there already. And I like to park my cars or my pickups or everything. If it's nothing wrong with that, I just want to make sure it's okay with you guys.
So you're asking that we allow you to park your backhoes and trucks on the lot to the west of the gas station? Is that what you're saying?
Right in the front of the gas station, the other lot. You're right beside Dr. Ehrman's place.
Street. Okay.
That's my lot there, and I would like to put my cars and my pickups and, you know, place to park because I'm buying a house over here. And I don't think you guys let me park there. I think I do. I don't know. But I mean, it's a place. It's a nice little home I'm buying. And I want to live there. And got a good parking area there so I can have two cars or three cars in there. But the rest of the stuff I got, I want to put it over here if you don't mind. Because I got to empty the gas station parking area because he's going to be working on trucks, cars, and everything in there. So I got to take all my trucks and cars out of there. And I got four cars, so I'll have two over here in the new house I bought, or two, or maybe three. Three or four I might have there. And the rest I want to put them on my lot over here. If you guys don't mind, that's what I want to do. Right now I got my two backhoes there parking. I need them when they call me to do digging or do whatever, I'll go do it. But I'm going to let my gas station be run by my son. He wants it. He wants to buy it. I'm going to see if he can make it. Because I'm getting too young and I don't want to work there no more.
Yeah. You do know you're going against the city ordinances.
Huh?
We've already discussed this before. You're going against the city ordinances, but I'll let the council, if they want to entertain a motion, they can. If they don't say anything, then the answer is no. Okay? So do I hear a motion at all? Do you want to entertain any questions for Rodney?
Well, I've been talking to Rodney for a while since we discussed the truck parking and stuff. And we looked at a couple different ways to see what would try to help him. And I talked to Rodney earlier in the week, and I asked him about a proposal and a possible time limit on it too. And what I'm going to ask tonight is see if I could kind of work with Rodney until our next council meeting and see if we could get a kind of a time limit put together for it and stuff, and if I could bring this back to the council for a vote at the next council meeting.
I mean, you can bring anything you want to the council as a council member, so
yes.
That's So that's what you want to do then? Postpone this discussion and you're going to work on it, Ken?
Yes. Yeah, like I said, I've discussed it with Rodney, and I think earlier in the week I talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to you about a time limit,
yes,
possibly for it. And we can make variances in some of our zoning by vote of the council. But see, I'm not looking for permanent parking there or something. And I'm looking for a time limit. And if I could get together with you, and we'll put together something that we could bring back to the council that
appreciate it.
I think that would work, then I'd like to see it come back to the next council meeting for a vote of the council.
Jim, I have a question for you. Is that something we can do since we're showing special whatever to one individual in this community? Is that something we can do as a council?
It will all depend on the nature of the proposal.
Okay.
That's why I would encourage that Mr. Piercy be engaged in the conversations. I mean, it is correct that the council can permit some deviations in some minor deviations in the application of part of your zoning, but for the most part, deviations in zoning are done by your hearing examiner as variances. The council doesn't grant zoning variances. The hearing examiner does that.
Okay.
So that may or may not be where the proposal heads in that direction. I think it's important that during the discussion that Mr. Piercy just be part of the conversation, and I think he's got a good wealth of information and background. And then depending on what's proposed, then I think your question becomes appropriate, Mayor, depending on the nature of what appears that would perhaps help Mr. De Leon out.
Okay.
So it's suggesting a meeting together with Mr. Piercy, and I could do that.
Okay, Rodney.
And go over with Rodney.
See, I moved my backhoe from where I had it over there for this other guy's Bear Lake and everything. And I'm afraid he's going to tear out my backhoe because I had it parked right there in front of this deal he's putting up. And I don't want to be a knapsack, but that's my territory and everything. And I seen him, they come tell me, please move it. And I said, well, it's my property and everything. I should leave it there. But they can tear my backhoe there, and I won't have a chance to know who did it. He could have done it or something, you know. So I decided I wouldn't have parked in that area. So I went and parked it over here so I can keep an eye on my backhoes.
Okay, well, we're gonna. Can I work with you on that? And
yeah.
Meet with?
So I'm okay already now, so.
Okay. Okay. Thanks
a lot.
That's
all I have to say.
Okay. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Any other citizen input? Okay. Do I hear a motion for the approval of the amended agenda?
I shall move.
Who?
Second.
Okay. Can Taylor and Mark Snyder. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same? Okay, consent agenda. Do I hear a motion for that?
So moved.
Second.
Dan? Okay, and then Ken Johnson. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same? Okay, it passes. Proclamation honoring Tommy Tindall.
Oh, you want to come up here for a second? Spent a bunch of time with him at our centennial. We appreciate this young man a lot for all the work you do around the town. And whereas
Okay, July 3rd pool activity request, Othello Chamber of Commerce. President Janelle, you want to come address this? There's all the stuff. Got where to go.
Just to give you a quick update on our July 3rd activities, the Pentagon did approve us for 4 aircraft. I'm working with Fairchild right now. We've been playing telephone tag to select those 4 aircraft. So that's really exciting. And one other thing that I thought was just kind of heart-tugging, I've been working with some Vietnam vets to try and let them decide how they'd like to be honored that day on their banner. And you know what they want on their banner? Welcome home.
Wow.
That's all they want, is welcome home, which I thought was pretty neat. Pretty neat.
Wow.
So we're making great progress. The one that I need to address you about tonight, I've been working with the pool manager, Amy Ross, and they would like to do some special games this day on our Patriots Day. And some of the things that they would like to do is to restrict age for 2 hours, from 12 to 1 when the pool opens at noon. From 12 to 1, they would restrict it from the 6 and under to, actually 12 years old and under. And then at 1 to 2, it would be the 13 to the 18 year olds. And the reason that they would like to do this is they would like to have some games specified to those age groups and let them have the full area so they could really concentrate on those ages. They've got duck races in the Lazy River, inner tube races, ping pong blowing relays, a money dive, and lots of things. And I know on here it talked about younger kids going down the slide, but we would not breach any rules. That is a safety issue with the height. I don't know if it's height or weight, how it goes on their height, but that would not be breached because that's a safety issue and that's not an option. So it would, and then it would return to include everyone in the pool from 2 until close at 7 p.m. So it would be restricted for just those 2 hours for the age. We would obviously need to publicize this extensively. I'm holding the signs to go out waiting, pending this, because we're waiting to put the signs up so we can help notify, put it in the newspaper, post it at the pool from now until then so we can notify those parents. So that there's a minimal disruption to access, I guess is the right way.
I was at that meeting also. One of my concerns was, when I was on the council, Mark would remember this, Ken, I suppose, too. Parents like to drop their kids off and take off, you know what I mean, without knowing what's going on. So Amy had mentioned that those kids, if that happened, they'd be, you know, ushered into the swimming pool area, not left outside or anything like that, so that the kids aren't just roaming around wondering what to do and where's mom. And you know, that was one of the things that was brought up, so that was how they addressed that one. But any questions from council for Janelle? Do I hear any kind of motion?
I guess I got a quick question. If we're worried about having these younger kids, you know, not being able to be in there from 1 to 2, could we switch those times around?
Oh, heavens, yes. I think that's very...
Would that make more sense? And then those kids, you know, because at 2 o'clock it opens back up for open swim, so those kids could just stay there. And these older kids, 13 to 15, I'm pretty sure they should be able to take care of themselves.
There's plenty of activities going on in the park, which is a good thought, Mark, that those older groups could go out into the park, participate in. There's a texting competition. There's rock band competition. We've got lots of activities going on that, yeah, I think that's a very wise thing. I feel more comfortable having that age group, you know, venture back into the park for an hour than those younger ones.
Yeah, the biggest concern I had was the fact of the parents dropping kids off, so it sounds like they addressed that. So,
one thing, Mayor, that we possibly could do to help with that is put a staff person out in the parking lot you know, as the parents are coming to remind those parents, just want to remind you, you know, today's a little bit different to try and catch any of those parents. I realize that there's not everyone goes to the parking lot, but that is something that we could do additionally if you requested that.
One of the other things that was discussed a little bit too is I know the younger kids have to have an adult or older supervision with them. I think kids 8.
A little bit louder, I can't hear you.
Sometimes the younger kids are supposed to have an adult supervision. Mm-hmm. And what happens sometimes is both kids are dropped off and the older sibling is left there to watch the younger one. It was mentioned possibly that the older siblings might be able to be snagged and actually help with the games.
If not even helping with games, they could still be in the pool area.
Yeah, it'd be hard to turn them away when they got a sibling in the pool.
Yeah.
And nothing else.
I think that's definitely doable. I'm sure they would take any extra hands.
I'll go ahead and make the motion to allow for the time change for July 3rd?
It is, yes.
Second.
Okay, 1 second. Okay, any more discussion? All in favor say yay.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same. Okay, it passes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Janelle.
We said yay 100 years ago.
Well,
you got to come out of the weekend.
I guess. You haven't had the 100. Centennial operation too long. Okay, Guama update, Paul Stoker.
Well, Mayor, first question was probably what would you like to hear? Some of you haven't seen her before.
Okay.
You want a quick brief summation of where we live and what you're sitting on top of, or do you want to go right to the meat of new stuff?
What's council want?
Well, the new stuff.
You want new stuff? What you've been every meeting.
I two things I would like out of this. One, it was reported to me you went to the high school and told people we're going to run out of water in 10 years, which is a real buzzkill for developing the town. And two, talk a little bit about if this ridge at Highway 17 is still there, because I still talk to people that out of Bruce we have artesian water and that we may be bringing water from out there. It's on the other side of the ridge, artesian water. We may be bringing water from Bruce to the city, and they just scoff at me. Is that viable? So when are we going to run out of water? Is bringing in water from the Bruce area or the other side of that ridge still in play after further review?
Let me speak on the first issue. I did go to the high school and talk to some of the seniors, probably 150 of them. I absolutely cannot guarantee what they bring out of whatever I say. the gist of my experience, I think they got several things all mixed up together, which is pretty normal. When asked what the survey said about the users of the aquifer out east of here, the answer was yes, that the expectations given in the Bureau of Reclamation, those air heaters would be out of water within 10 years. That is correct. Okay. The expectation that the water that the city uses is 10,000 years old and has a finite limit. That is true. I didn't say that the water lasts 10 years. They put two and two together.
Okay. that's why we invited you here tonight.
Yeah.
So.
Came up with six.
I don't know the time frame for the water for the city will develop. You have a fairly consistent static water level drop within your wells. I suspect it will continue to deteriorate. If you want to do arithmetic, you can do that. Figure it out that way if you like. We will, by Christmas, bring out the first of our 3D models of the sub-basin areas and approach trying to put together a water budget related to the timing factor. We probably will not southern border for you, for a sub-basin. You're in a very difficult area to evaluate because we suspect that the volcanic dike that you're referring to that travels from Walla Walla up through the Connell area, east of Othello and probably west of Moses Lake, is now fairly certain that it exists. It doesn't come up above about 500 to 600 feet below the surface out east of Othello, but unfortunately, most of your wells are sucking from below that distance anyway. So it is out there. It is fairly well documented that the Bruce Fort well is cased to the Sentinel Bluffs layer, and there is a high pressure gradient there caused by the volcanic dike. And I actually have a picture or a drawing of that if you want to see it. These don't look the same as I put them on before. Yes, the volcanic dike is expected to still be there. I mean, more evidence that it is there. However, the question that has been asked repeatedly is exactly where is it to within the inch? Well, that's a problem. We have a 2 to 3 mile wide magnetic resonance image of where it should be, but that's 2 to 3 miles wide. So basically from Highway 17 to 2 or 3 miles out, it's somewhere in that vicinity. It's 600 feet deep, unless you dug down and checked it. I can't tell you any better than that. That's better than being 10 miles wide, that's all I can tell you. It is fairly well known and assured that, yes, the Bruce Fort well, again, as I said, is cased to the Sentinel Bluffs. It does have 74 feet of static water level. I haven't heard that it's Artesian, but it's really close to the surface. Did I answer the questions you asked me?
Yes.
More or less.
More.
If you wish to drill a well east of the volcanic dike, and that's your expectation, unless you went far out to Bruce and you wanted to be closer than that, you'd probably have to drill a 6-inch pilot hole, figure out whether or not you hit it or not. That's the best I can tell you. Mm-hmm. I certainly wouldn't invest in a 24-inch hole and then find out that you went in the wrong spot, if that's what you mean. Otherwise, there's already a well out there.
But it's a good well, though.
It is. But the water is 10,000 years old. Don't mistake anything different. It has a high static water level simply because that's what the static is at the moment. Will it go down is the first question you should ask me. And the answer is yes, it will. How long? I don't know. East of there, wells have deteriorated dramatically, and it's a complicated structure. One thing I'd like to remind you of is that the Bruce Fort well, in its relationship to the dip or the angle of the interflow zones, is pretty much the bottom of the barrel. So everything goes uphill from that. So the fact that it's got a high static level means it's back to water in that direction. Now the observation is that when an irrigator out east of town says that his well has gone dry, and let's just take an arbitrary number, let's say 2,000 gallons a minute, let's say that was his expectation, that was his water rate. What that means is he can't pump 2,000 gallons a minute anymore. Doesn't mean he can't pump 1,999. Or 1950 or 1900 or 1800. It just means he can't pump what he expected to pump. In many cases, of course, it's lower than that. Generally, then what happens is they will then drop their expectations to a deeper interflow zone. And when that happens, since about 98, the Army College has from the Sentinel Bluffs up, and they've been doing that, the ones that have drilled deeper. Many of them still, of course, are still where they were 40 years ago, but that's what's been happening. There have been some well exclusion from the Wampum group, and even from the Sentinel Bluffs, because usually when the department calls you, makes them an observation, it's our experience that they go a little overboard and the keys right on down the next layer or two, just for safety's sake. But that's what's been going on.
Well, I would just, you know, putting two to two together too, if the city's gonna run out of water and there's water out here at Bruce that's close to the surface and good water and producing wells, you know, it's not totally out of the realm that even though it might be expensive, that might be our future water supply.
I certainly would consider in the medium, near to medium range, whatever you call the time frame, certainly in the next 10 to 20 years, if what I'm hearing from everybody is correct, that could possibly be a good source of water for reasonable time period. 50 years, probably not.
How certain are they on this 10,000-year-old water? Because I'll be up front with you, I'm a real skeptic on that. Because in that you run water over salt rock, and so you say you have salty water. So if you're running water over minerals and that are 10,000 years old, maybe you think your water's 10,000 years old.
First of all, the geochemist who runs the process is probably one of the best in the world at that point. Secondly, when we sample, each well that we sample for those specific age, the lab costs alone cost me $3,000. We do 23 different samples, and they range from tritium, fluorocarbons, carbon-14 dating, hydrogen ion analysis. And after that, I get really lost. I'm sorry. But they do 23 different checks. And so when they say it's 10,000 years old, they all say it's 10,000 years old. And it's not just one sample. Every sample was 10,000 years old. Not just one well. They all were. Unless, of course, they had skin water. I was skeptical too, obviously, when I first got started in this about 3 years ago in the geochemistry, 4 years ago. I don't have much doubt now. Currently, we're doing probably close to 500 samples this summer throughout the Four County region. And we'll be doing at least two wells with every city. And I have interviewed the public works directors for all the cities, from Tri-Cities to the Dam. And every city seems to have the same relative story with intercepted copper. Generally, the cities have been going deeper for water. And it sounds reasonable because it's farther away from the surface, so there's less potential of nitrates or other contaminations. The water quality initially is good when you get into the bottom Wampum area and the top of the Grand Ronde. The water is very potable and very good. The farther you go down in the Grand Ronde, the water starts to be really not so good. But it would make it encouraged by Department of Health and by Department of Ecology to do that. And the process of sealing off their wells deeper and deeper and deeper. In general, the cities that have gone from a shallower well would have a static water level of like 50, 60 feet from the surface, only 200-300 feet deep. To go to a 1,000-foot deep well, their static water level dropped to the 300-400-foot level, and then commenced to drop every year at about 5 or 6 foot per year level. Warden has two useful wells. Roughly about the same static water level as the surface of the East Low Canal. You can sort of put two and two together there. Water's pretty good, other than one of the wells has a trace of tellum in it. Someone apparently about a mile from East Loop Canal, sealed them down to about 500-600 feet. Static water level in their wells is about 350 feet down and dropping. So they've exchanged their rechargeable water here for an unrechargeable well over here. And pretty much that's the same story with Quincy, Moses Lake, Connell, all the cities in Lincoln County. The only one that's separate from that is Mesa. And their wells are only 100 feet deep. And they pump right out of the gravel in the bottom of the spots of buoy. And they have for 50 years, and water's still the same as it was 50 years ago. Harrington, I believe, has some of the shallow wells, and their water's artesian, almost at their wellhead. And Ritz Hills are deep, Clovis is deep. Washducting takes most of their water from springs on the side of the hill from above the city. They collect them in cement vaults, and yet they still drill an 800 feet basalt well in the middle of the city. They only use it for irrigation in the summertime because it's pretty expensive because it's 400 foot lift.
So does Washtenaw have to treat that water, or are they just the springs,
know.
Or is it just chlorinated?
They chlorinate it. I know that.
Hmm.
But they have a cement vault back into the hill that they built. It's covered, so the water just comes out of the side of the hill. They have three locations where they collect it, and four or five where they don't. The rivers run down greatly. They just collect it inside of. The Washtenaw sits in a valley. It's probably a 100-foot ridge above it, whatever it is, 200 foot, whatever it is. And so they collect spring water. And that's what feeds the city most of the year. But you don't have spring water here, so that wouldn't be a potential. We think there is a earthquake fault from about Corfu at about northwest angle. Across the Earl Slope to probably Dodson Road area that separates you from Earl Slope. That's the expectation. I tell you these things because you should know that we don't have those documented. That's hard to document, so that's our speculation right now. That the other thing to note is that the lava interflow zones tip from Spokane towards Portland, generally. And the interesting part is that they bottom out and they go back up the other side. They head back up to ryegrass underneath Royal. So many of the interflow zones that are under Royal actually come up into the Columbia River. And we're suspicioning right now that Mike Brown is pumping Columbia River water on the west end of Russell. With this several hundred foot deep wells. It's about 400 or 500 feet from the river just up to the surface. And he drills about about 200 or 300 feet, 400 feet below the surface of the Grease Rapids pool. The fact that your static water level in your well goes up and down with the rise and fall of the pool and Grease Rapids is a pretty good indication. Okay, so if you're asking me if I'm convinced that 10,000-year-old water number is correct, I am convinced of that. And we use 10,000 as a really good, easy number to say. The truth is, he actually comes up with 10,500, 11,600, 15,500, 28,000. He actually puts the actual dates on the water. We don't bother with any more than 10,000, just old enough. So he's had water as old as 50,000.
Well, your original theory that I liked was there's basalt, layers of gravel, basalt, and that water is trickling through those layers of gravel.
Right.
Is that 10,000-year-old water trickling through that gravel, or is that being renewed?
It will trickle if you take it out on this end, but it's our expectation that the water's been probably sitting in place for most of that time. But as we start to use it, obviously we're on the bottom end, and as we use it, it flows towards you. So when you turn the pump off in September, October, then it fills back in from way up, but slowly filters back in again. And then by February, it's back up and not quite as high as it was before.
So are you also convinced there was a theory out there that we're getting water seeping from Lake Roosevelt? Are you convinced that's not happening?
There's no water from Lake Roosevelt. It's physically impossible. There's 400 feet of granite all along the south edge of Lake Roosevelt. Granite doesn't transmit any water. And the wells that are 20 miles to the south of Lake Roosevelt have static water level 400 feet higher than the surface of the lake. So, no, there's no water in Lake Roosevelt. Zero. As far as I know, the only sustainable source of water in the basin comes from the Federal Project. That's all. That's the only source I know. There's a small amount of water that comes down the Spotsyl Pooley, Crab Creek drainage, and goes into the gravelly area south of Salt Lake called Adrian Sink. From most lakes to Salt Lake, it's sand and gravel and a lot of it. And that has a lot of water in it. And so the water comes down Crab Creek and pretty much saturates out into that flow. But Crab Creek only runs a few months a year and not a real huge volume of water. So it's not really applicable to this far south.
I'm done. I feel like I've been hogging it, so.
Good question.
Any other questions from council? So you feel like then this tests are actual science, like I know carbon dating, there's a lot of questions whether it's very accurate, you know. So this is an accurate science.
I feel really bad if we only tested one way, like mm-hmm. we suggested carbon 14. But like I say, you do 23 different tests, mm-hmm. and they all come back with the same community. So, and about a half of those tests are so sophisticated, there's only three labs in the world that do them. So they're pretty sophisticated. The hydrogen ion testing, for instance, and now you're going to call me a liar because it took me a while to figure this out too. About 8 years ago, there was a group of scientists who developed a process to determine a mapping process throughout the world in 50-mile grids to determine the hydrogen ion makeup of a water molecule. And what it does is it sets a number attached to the hydrogen ions, the electrons that are in the molecule. And the way it works is, and if I get this wrong, don't sue me, but the way it works is out in the ocean, pick up the water vapor, different weights of hydrogen ions come up into the water vapor. As it comes across the land and cools, it makes clouds and it rains. The simple fact is the heaviest ones fall out first. So the 19s will fall out in Seattle. Othello is a 17. Then you go up into British Columbia and the other side of the Rockies, it's 14. So if we do hydrogen ion analysis on water that's a 14, we pretty much know it came from the Columbia River because it came from British Columbia. It has to be a 17 to have fallen here and landed Sprague Lake, right in the city. That makes sense? Another check on all the surveys. Also, your question about the water flowing through your rocks, and I'm not even going to try to answer that one. But the chemistry footprint, according to Dimitri, that's his name, he can tell you within a range how long water
Paul, thank you for coming. I guess we haven't heard any more questions, so.
Well, let me, one more, indulge me. Are these the layers of flow represented there in the blue?
Yes, some of the major ones.
See, they tell me these farmers are drilling down 2,000 feet for water, and they're drilling through all these layers, and there's no big issue about mixing water. I don't see when you put a hole through these layers that they just don't come into that hole and go down, and the next layer does the same thing. And there's no way they're casing those wells 2,000 feet down. Now you've heard, though, when we cammered well 6 down here, our own well, we have water trickling from an upper aquifer going down.
Yes, correct. And but I'm saying you can have it either direction.
Okay.
You have both.
It sounds like, Paul, in your view, if we want to have more or less sustainable water for a longer period, we need to go.
Pardon me, start again.
Okay. Sounds like, in your view, in your opinion, if we want to have longer sustainable water, we need to go east and bring it back to the city. Longer? 1,000 years? No, I'm joking. I mean, that's what I'd like to see, but let's say 100 years.
The odds of the Bruce well lasting more than probably 30 years is very low. It's not being recharged by anything. It's connected to all the other users of the water out there, and it's dropping. There's no reason to believe that it wouldn't continue to deteriorate like the others. How fast is a $64 question? I really can't answer that. That's extremely complicated. 100 years from now, 500 years from now, 1,000 years from now, I've already stated that already unequivocally. There is only one rechargeable source of water here. Columbia River water, which is the Inno Sullivan Reservoir. Mm-hmm. That's it. There's no other source. The rainwater doesn't work. There's no river around here, so that's it. That's all there is. The water that's on the surface doesn't make it below about 200-300 feet. All the wells we've sampled, there's no new water below. City of Warden is cased down about 500-600 feet, and there's no new water in their wells, even though it's saturated 200-300 feet. Same with Quincy. Quincy actually has a couple of artesian wells, but their deeper basalt wells have static water levels down to 200-300 foot level. So they're separate. So what that generally tells me is that these layers are impenetrable. And this particular diagram shows you well construction, and it shows you what's called gradient levels. You see here you've got 5 wells, A, B, C, D, and the last one. First 4 are casing, the black casing on the sides of the wells, right down to the little gradient that it's A and B and C. So you see that the static water level in well A is equal to how far it's backed up the hill here. It's always working that grade. So D goes down and hits a low pressure gradient. It's only backed up to this level. And he has about a way deep static level. This is what happens when you're open to all of them. The static water level in the well is anybody's guess, because it's a combination of all four static gradients working towards against each other. Some are going down, some are going up, you know, et cetera. And of course, as they start to lower the gradient in each one, they'll eventually neutralize each other and become equal, of course. I don't think that actually ever really happens, but it gets closer. So that's a little graphic of well construction and how the gradients work.
Can I say something here?
Sure.
I'm going to add a little fuel to the fire here. As we talk about, yeah, we're going to run out of water. We're going to run out of a lot of things in 1,000 years. Maybe we'll have another ice age flood by that time, take care of the whole problem. We'll have it recharged, refilled, and won't have to worry about it.
Absolutely.
That's how it started in the first place about 89 times. So anyway, my thought here is that's one reason why I think all of us in the Columbia Basin need to push very hard for surface water out east of here to cut down the number of wells that goes on out in that area. That way you cut down the discharge of that water from those lower areas. That water will last a lot longer for the people that really are going to need it in the long run. And if you use the surface water, that cuts off those wells. You don't have to use that amount of water. So it's kind of two-way circle there, right or wrong?
You're correct. Supporting the Odessa special study results due in 60 days from now, politically, will ultimately be, at least in a short time period, to your advantage, I think. I'm a little reluctant to say it'll actually affect the wells we currently have with this volcanic dike in a way, but it certainly will have an impact on Bruce. There's one other aspect that I need to suggest to you that you probably need to consider in the 1,000-year expectation here. The second half of the project, or now the Odessa Special Study, has been attempted now for close to 50 years. Failed 4 times for a variety of reasons, mostly lack of local support. The Effect of Air Reclamation currently controls that process along the Department of Ecology. The Federal Bureau of Reclamation has the ability to enter into M&I contracts, municipal industrial contracts. And their only limitation is the legal limits provided by the federal government in the legislation. So I know this sounds simplistic, but if it was your determination to enter into a contract and say, build a pipeline from here to Sullivan Reservoir and put in water treatment facility plant for permanent water, your immediate obstacle would be to get Patty Murray to get included in federal legislation to allow that. Now, I'm making this observation to you because I don't think many of you have thought about it, but the truth is many of the cities who, like Oregon, most likely yourself, and Quincy and Ephrata and Salt Lake, all sit on a delivery mechanism, a canal, or nearby some kind of reservoir, in the case of O'Sullivan, which has water year-round. So I'm just making you aware of that opportunity. It's not going to happen tomorrow. But what I'm trying to point out to you is that if the Odessa special study, the first attempt in 50 years, that seems to be realistically successful to build a relationship enough to have some improvement in this area, doesn't succeed, it multiplies your ability to make your contract with them immensely more difficult. I hope I've made that clear enough.
I just disagree with you on that we don't have a source of water, because it's, and I think I've said this to you before, it's my prediction that someday this canal out here is going to flow year-round and we're going to have a water treatment plant, and that's how we're going to have water. Could happen.
I've always said that. We've got two rivers run right by us here. All we've got to do is put a treatment plant in. We've got water. We've just got to get through the legalities of it, make it happen.
Well, currently, they tend to shut them off for 5 months out of the year. So
right.
A little bit of ergo. That's why I talked about the pipeline with Sullivan. But
right.
Yes.
Same theory.
There are two canals. That is correct. Yes. I'm not giving you any really good answers. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to give you what I think we know. Again, we will try to have a more well-defined water budget, a couple of three of the sub-basins by Christmas or shortly thereafter. And we won't have all the answers. I guarantee you we'll never have all the answers, but we'll have more. Okay.
Well, thank you, Paul. We appreciate you coming and educating us.
Okay.
I see we're going to have to look to our future and what we're going to want to do. So, something we need to address in the future, I guess, when you get done with the next study you're talking about. We're going to be interested. So,
thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for taking your time. Yeah. Thank you for taking your time, too, and coming. So, we appreciate that.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay. Resolution to allow the Othello Spud Run car show on July 16th and 17th. Debbie?
Thank you, Mayor. The All City Classic Car Club members have been preparing for their upcoming 15th annual car show, which is scheduled on July 16th and 17th. Their preliminary plans include a parade of cars and registration event on Friday, July 16th, in front of the City Hall Police Department building. As they have in the past, they would like to request to close off Main Street between 4th Avenue and 7th Avenue to allow registration and the parade of cars between 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. The cars allowed within this area will only be participants of the car show and have already been registered for the Saturday event. They will then host the slow drags during the event on Main Street. Emergency access will be allowed into the area, and 4th and 7th Avenue will be open for traffic traveling north and south. The car show will then be held the following day at Kiwanis Park, and Public Works has reported that the car club makes very little impact to the park, and they support the request to use the park and city right away. Staff recommends that council approve the resolution authorizing use of city park property and right away for the 15th annual car show scheduled for July 16th and 17th, 2010. I don't think there's anybody here from the car club, but if you have any questions, we did meet with them, and
yes,
maybe we can field some questions.
Does the car club, or are they aware that Main Street might be torn up?
No, they're not.
Slow gravel.
Yeah. That's a good question.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't bring that up, did we, Jay? We did not discuss that.
Any other questions? Thoughts, comments? Okay, so do I hear a motion to approve the resolution authorizing use of city property for their 15th annual car show scheduled for July 16th and 17th, 2010, and authorize the use of public right-of-way for an organized parade of cars and registration events, whatever that's going to mean.
I think that motion.
So who said first? I heard a so move over here.
I'll second.
Okay. Mark Snyder first. Okay, and then Charles will get second. Any other questions?
Debbie, you might talk to them and see if they could have an alternative street just in case Main Street won't be usable.
I think that we'll need to work that out. We'll find out what the schedule is of Main Street, and then we may have to bring something back.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, passes. Okay, well, number six update, Jay.
What I'd like to do first here is show you some video of well six. Back this up 780 going down the hole right now. Pretty soon you'll start to see that tubing that we had issues with, and I'll show you some pictures of that. But I'm just going to let this go a little bit, and I'll skip forward at different points and let you see a little bit of what's going on. There's the tubing right there.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that. That's the only remaining one.
Correct. We went down and pulled out quite a bit of this tubing, and I'll show you here just a little bit further into the video how this is lodged. See, right now we're sitting right about 790 with this. Yeah, you've got some samples of the tubing there. Right now, the main tubing here, we have the holes set just above that. I'll show you some pictures of the holes also and what we found. But we did go down and tug on this and get it to release with what we got to grab on with. I'll also show you a picture of some of the screen that had previously went through, and I'll explain a little bit of that too. But basically, this just continues down. You can see the hose as it spirals down the hole.
Will this show us those stainless steel screens?
Yes.
Okay.
We're getting there.
That's what it's caught on?
Yes. There's weights that actually help the end of this tube. It helped pull it down through. And those are caught down there in the casing and the screens. What we elected to do was leave two sections of the column off of the pumps out of the hole, and we brought the holes up just as an additional safety measure, not to get any tube in this. And that's the way it's going to remain until we get five back together and we go back and actually do the rehabilitation of six. Just kind of showing, looking at the tube. The pink stuff is the dye that was actually injected into the well, if you remember, for the testing purposes of the flow zones and where the fluorides are and everything else. This was some of the tubing that was used to do that. I'm going to skip forward a little more. You're in an open borehole right now, 900 feet. Remember that the holes will remain above this level.
So Jay, you're thinking in the fall we'd go back in and try to pull that screen? Is that what you're thinking?
That's what we're looking at. Yes. After five is resolved. Right here, you're looking at the very top of the stainless liner. And if you remember right, it's a liner and screen section, liner screen section. And you're just kind of starting to show you the beginning of that. And right here is that weights. This is what the tubing was attached to. They're stuck behind the wall.
Wow.
Right here. Stuck behind the wall. They're lodged. This is the casing and screens that we are required by ecology to attempt to pull during the rehabilitation of well 6. This is where we're going to go down, try to pull these out, and if we can't do it, then ecology is going to be standing by and grant us a waiver to leave them in place. New standards for ecology is that there is no broken casing. There's one of the weights here. You see, there's a string of weights. You'll see a little bit more. But you can't have separate pieces of casing within a well. If you have any casing in a well whatsoever, it has to be continuous. You cannot take it part of the way, nothing, part of the way, nothing. And so that's one of the reasons behind the rehabilitation of 6. Here you can see the well, the weights.
I thought that stainless was, they called it a strainer, like it has holes in it.
You'll see there on this.
I mean, the stainless, is that what I said?
Yeah, it's coming.
Oh, okay, I haven't seen any holes in it yet.
This case portion, then you'll get into the screen portion, and I'll skip forward a little bit more here.
Did the tester people realize that leaving those tubes in the well cost us $60,000?
We're working on that right now. Here's the beginning section.
Oh my gosh, and the ecology doesn't like that, huh?
Nope. It's because it's not continuous from the top of the hole. It's a new standard for well standards, and that's the variance we asked for and were denied. The only way we can get the variance is if we actually make an attempt to pull this out of the hole. And it doesn't come, then they will be on hand to say, okay,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
Looks real nice. What kind of dimension are we looking at as the how much casing, screen casing?
I would have to go back through the original drawings or sit here and count out the footages, but I could get that for you.
I mean, is it like only 4 feet or is it 20 feet? this is all the stainless steel screen?
Yes.
Wow. And it just seems like that would be the textbook situation to have a screen down, stainless steel screen down there to hold back any sand and gravel.
Looks like it was around 10 feet.
About 50 feet of that, better.
This continues down to 1,050 feet to the bottom.
Of the stainless steel casing?
Yes, here you go.
Or just the camera? Is that still stainless there, do you know, or is that just...
No, this is still casing. It goes all the way to the bottom of the hole, so he's backing up the hole now. But there it is, right there. And you can see some of the weights right there. Mm-hmm. So it.
So that stainless steel casing below the screen goes all the way to the bottom?
Yes.
Wow. I thought it was a little... 4 foot section around a certain aquifer that came in, so I was, I'm being enlightened.
Now, is the hole the same size all the way down, or does it get bigger as it comes up?
Top above water level is a bigger hole. I it's just about there, but when it comes down here, you'll see some of the debris in the bottom, which is normal. That's where some of the weights went.
And where do you think the bottom of the shaft is right now? Is it down 900 feet? The bowls?
The bottom of the bowls?
Yeah.
We're back up at 780. It's right at the top of that tube.
Okay.
And there's the bottom. Just a little bit of debris and gravel and some weights that you can see there to your left. But that's the bottom of it. 1196.2.
And we have water coming in through the bottom.
Through the upper screens. Through the screens as you get back up.
Oh, okay.
Not through the casing.
To me, you start pulling those screens out, you risk the whole, that section.
It's our whole argument with ecology, but because of the new standards, it's just not going to fly unless we make the attempt. But I have a couple of pictures here that I'd like to just like to show you.
Kind of rolling that would be.
I'm going to go ahead and shut this down. Let's see if I can get here. Yeah, there's the table. First thing I'll show you is the old screen that was on the bottom of the bowls. I actually took some of the tubing that you have that you pass around up there and attempted to push it through the screen, it'd be at the exact right angle to the screen and actually find a spot on it to even begin to push that tubing through it. So the new stainless steel screen is a lot like the screens that you saw in the bottom of the well here. They won't deteriorate and end up like this obviously is here. So we're fairly confident that we're not going to have an issue with that tubing until we get to the rehabilitation of well six.
Wasn't that inspected though before we put it back in there a couple years ago?
Excuse me?
I say, wasn't that inspected and whatnot before we put it back in there a couple years ago, that screen?
Yes.
So did they damage it when they installed it?
That's possible, or it could have been damaged pulling it out, but at any rate, it wasn't the quality of screen that we put in this time. This will settle down. You might be able to see it just a little bit, but all that tubing is up inside the pump bowls, the bottom. They got sucked in there. And that's what happened. As it started sucking it in there, we started losing gallons per minute until it was down to just almost nothing. We couldn't quite understand what was going on, and that's when we decided we had to pull it, and this is what we found. Once we found this, we made a hook and cable and ran down the hole and pulled out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of feet of this tubing. And it's all fished out except for that last line you've seen in the video. And the bowl set now, we kept it up higher, as I said, to where the top of that is, the bottom of the bowls is above the top of the tubing that's there now. And we're really confident that it's not going to be an issue. Then we go back in to do the rehabilitation. Then we'll look a little closer at getting that out of there, and we'll reset it to 6 p.m. at the additional heat pad line.
There's in front of well 6 on the ground is black tubing and this kind of tubing. Does both that get fished out of this well?
Black tubing is damaged drug tubing. Our transducer, our measures are
standard
water levels. That's not the same.
So that wasn't an issue?
That was tied to the column. So this is what we got in the hole. Well 6 is back in as of Friday. Today we were running it to waste. We are taking samples right now, and they're 24 hours out. So, I mean, we're looking at pending a good bacteriological test back online Wednesday, Thursday, with well 6. The contractor is then moving down to well 5 to resume what they started to begin with, and we'll be back trying to get it the rest of the way out of the hole.
Any questions for Jay? Thank you for informing us. Okay, consideration to rescind the previous motion to reimburse the Port District for waterline extension. Kim Johnson, would you rescind your motion?
Yes, I will.
Dan Deaver, would you rescind your motion?
I will rescind a second.
Okay. So do I hear a motion to consider to approve reimbursement to the Port of Othello, Washington, 9934, for water line extension in the amount of $11,235.
I so move.
I think we've got to have a vote on the rescinding of the...
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. That's right. That's right.
Right.
Yeah. I slipped right by that. Okay. Do I hear any discussion on it? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay. Consideration to approve reimbursement to the Port of Othello, Washington, 9934, for water line extension in the amount of $11,235.
I so move that we...
Okay, Kim Kaler, we have a second?
Second.
Dan Deaver, any more discussion?
Well, you all know how I feel about this, so unless somebody had an epiphany, they want to save the taxpayers $11,000, I guess it is what it is.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Couldn't tell who said aye. Raise your hands, please. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. Opposed, the same. Okay, duly noted, thank you. Okay, that passes then. License agreement with L. Jasmine J.
Joel Quezada purchased the old Potter's building and did a remodel into a grocery store. During this process, it was determined that the roof overhang on the west side of the building along Venice Avenue actually extended into the right-of-way. He has requested that that remain in place. And what we did is we looked at that request and determined that it really wasn't a problem. It didn't obstruct pedestrian traffic or anything else. So the way to do that is through a license agreement to remain within the right-of-way. The license agreement is attached here. We went through it, determined there is no issues, and for a budget, it's a $50 annual revenue for a license agreement fee. There was some issues with the roof line of that building being leaning in. He does, as part of his building permit, he is going to repair that with a cantilever, and it will be taken care of. And that's all been approved as to construction. So we're recommending tonight that the structure remain in place and that you approve the license agreement. And we need a motion to approve the license agreement with Joel Quezada at 531 East Main. Any questions about it?
That was the only question I had, was a little repair work needed to be done on that. And I think if they take care of that, I don't think there's any problem with it.
Yeah, they went through that. They went through that, and it's been, the repair has been approved.
Any other questions? Okay, do I hear a motion to approve the license agreement with Joel Quezada? Okay. At 531 East Main Street.
Motion.
Ken Johnson, you have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Charles, any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. Okay, Othello Police Department accreditation. I guess I'd like to really say how blessed we are to have the chief and the assistant chief. They went through this whole program of being inspected and going through all the different areas. He'll explain it to us somewhat. And we had no non-compliance issues. Is that understand, Steve?
Yes, sir.
You're right, which is very rare. They don't see that very often, so that's quite an achievement for our police department. This is the plaque I'll pass around and that was given to us. So go ahead, Steve.
Thank you, Mike. Currently, there are just slightly over 28 accredited expect that we will maintain compliance and live by the letter and spirit of the standards, the WASPIC standards that the agency must consider its mission, its legal mandated responsibilities, and the demands of the community. WASPIC has a non-adversarial and supportive relationship with the agencies and assumes the agencies will operate in compliance with their directives. About the standards, there are 140 professional standards, and they are all mandatory to meet by the letter of the standard itself. 86 are administrative standards, and 54 are operational. My job through this whole thing was to be committed to the accreditation process, provide vision, mission, and goals, provide the policies, procedures, rules, require accountability, find an accreditation mentor, identify accreditation manager, which we did, and that was Sergeant Nels Larson, train the accreditation manager, which we did, and then present the program to the staff, which was done by the supervisory staff, to every officer in the department. What the accreditation manager does is he has to create the filing system. He goes through and identifies gaps between the agency practice, policy, procedures, rules, and regulations, identifies gaps between WASPIC standard and practice, and focuses on agency performance. This is not just solely a paper drill. He considered a mock scene on site, which we did as a group, and he determined the readiness level of our agency. He came and said we were ready, and when the on-site came and did their evaluations, we actually had absolutely no findings, which is rare for an agency to pass with no findings and move right on into the accreditation. Usually they find something that doesn't match, or there's a couple of issues that an agency will have to correct before they can actually go to accreditation, and they have to be rescheduled for a review of those problem areas. The self-assessment was the longest phase of the program. So the accreditation manager compares the department policy to the standards. Proofs of the compliance take many forms, and a mock assessment can determine whether or not we were ready. Proofs of compliance, the agency has, we have the burden of proving to WASPIC that we are actually in compliance with all these standards, and we must provide all the documentation and whatever else that they need to demonstrate compliance of the standard. We use written directives, written documentation, observation, they use interviews as well. Some of the biggest challenges with accreditation is to make sure that management reviews on a consistent basis all pursuits, use of force, and internal investigations, privacy and security of all police records, notifying owners of vehicle impounds, something that would seem so small yet is such a huge obstacle. Maintaining training records of all employees, which we do, and we do a very good job at that. We have annual in-service training, which I talk about regularly when we do that. We have whistleblower protections with the proper harassment and support discrimination policies. Evidence procedures is a huge one, as is our temporary holding facilities, because a lot of liability comes with jails and lockups. Time-sensitive standards is an annual update on goals and objectives. Management review, again, of the pursuits and uses of force. Annual in-service training, which we managed to meet the CJTC standards again. The annual review, which is a report that will be done by the assistant chief to me, and then annual performance evaluations, which we do on every employee, and of course the big one, which is the annual audit of the property and evidence rooms, which is an item by item search of the evidence room to make sure that we can account for everything there. The final on-site was not an inspection, it's not adversarial. The assessment is a cooperative effort between the agency and the assessors working together towards the goal of achieving the accredited status for us. We used organizational charts, general orders, policies, procedures manuals, labor agreements, contracts, budgets, personnel manuals, and our annual report. These are the list of the accredited agencies. Cheney and Bellingham were two of the ones that were in our group. So last week when we did this, there was actually six new agencies, so I think that brought the total up to like 34. effort and everyone involved pulled together to make this happen. Our accreditation is a very significant accomplishment. It gives me great pleasure to inform you that the Oakville Police Department is now a recognized accredited agency of Gloucester. The accreditation team, Assistant Chief Dave Inks, Sergeant Nels Larson, Sergeant Dave Ram, Lois Weiss, and myself accepted the award last week at the Gloucester Conference. You should be proud and can be proud of your police department and the men and women who serve the community of Oakville. Thank you very much. I think you have a plaque.
Mm-hmm. Yep, right there.
And that will go on the wall of the police department.
Well, Chief, we're proud. That's really neat that, you know, our community can do something like that, and you know, you guys put all this labor and time into this, and I was there at the start of this, and I mean, they were going through everything. The tables all set up back in there, and how many people was it? Four? Was there something going through
there
stuff?
There was four assessors and then a representative from Accreditation
Commission. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was just, they said they were very cooperative, and things like that, and it was really neat. I'd like to say congratulations.
It was a very neat process. We learned a lot about ourselves, some of the things that we've done to really make it a success. We learned our early involvement with Lex Cole Policy Manual. They were a great company to work with because we were able to tie every policy to every standard. So one policy may touch on 10 different standards. And so you have to cross-reference every policy that you have that touches on that standard so that
appreciate it. You guys really put a high level on our police department and our citizens. I know appreciate that. So thank you very much. Okay, where are we at here? The DOL contract for DAPS Police Department. Steve?
Yes, thank you again. This issue before you tonight is approval of a contract or an interagency agreement between the Othello Police Department and the Department of Licensing, State of Washington. The Department of Licensing has a database that contains a lot of good information that's very helpful in certain types of investigations. We can run partial names, partial license plates. We could ask, we could find out how many 1963 Ford Fairlanes were registered in Othello, if that was our suspect vehicle, things like that to help us. Currently, we only have access to that information during Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. What we'd like to do is extend that to where we have 24-hour, 7-day-a-week coverage to be able to do that. And by signing this agreement, we will be allowed to access their database after hours. Because we use digital return and digital request, there are no fees, and it is encrypted. So there are no fees for that service. If there were to be a fee, it would be because we would request a hard copy or a certified copy, and we don't see that that ever happens. In fact, in the history of DAPS, which is driver in person's whatever search capabilities, they have never issued one of those, so I don't think that's going to be an issue. But the information would be very helpful with some of the investigations that we undertake. So the staff recommends that we go ahead and sign up for this capability and sign the agreement with DAPS so that we can access it. And what I would need tonight is a motion from you and approval to allow me to go ahead and sign as the department head for that. Any questions?
Make that motion.
Okay. Dan wants to make a motion that we enter into DAPS agreement and authorize Chief Dunnigan to sign it.
Second.
Mark Snyder, second. Any more questions or discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Any And great job, you guys. Make sure you tell everybody in the department. So,
I will.
Yeah. Okay, resolution to establish a construction fund. Mike?
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and members of council. No. Just thought that a little levity, just to kind of break the ice a little bit. Yeah. What you have before you tonight is simply a request. What we've done is we want to put all of the Main Street construction into one fund so we can see all the revenue sources coming into it and seeing all the expenditures going out of it. It's a nice way of tracking it. In order to do that, the state of Washington requires that we create a fund, and that is done by resolution. And so that's what this is before you tonight. It simply allows us to assign a fund number, and then when the project is all done, we will come back to council and ask you to remove that fund. So this is just kind of paperwork. So I would request a motion to approve the resolution establishing the 2010 Main Street and Infrastructure Project Fund.
Questions? Mark?
Part of this construction is coming from water and sewer enterprise funds.
Yes.
So would your accounting be like out of the water fund into this fund?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're going to pool all that money and then see how it's paid out.
It will delineate each individual item very clearly, and also on the expenditure side, be the same thing.
Okay.
Okay, so do I hear a motion to approve the resolution establishing the 2010 Main Street and Infrastructure Project Fund?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Gina?
I'll second.
Charles, second. Any discussion, questions? Dan? Oh, okay. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay. Thank you, Mike. Thank you. All right, unfinished business.
Got some. I don't know where this comes, but I think it comes under unfinished. On behalf of the Centennial Committee, we would like to thank the council, the staff, the police department, Public Works, and the fire department for their cooperation and help during the centennial ceremony this last weekend.
Great.
That worked.
Mm-hmm. Any other unfinished business?
I have a question.
Oh, okay.
On these, you know we have a gentleman in town that teaches this, right?
Nope.
That Sam's does.
Did he go to the school board or something and do...
Yeah.
Well, interesting. Okay.
Well, just food for thought.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to look too far. I mean, I know he did a course for the school.
Yeah, okay, well, that's interesting to know. New business? Mark?
On the sidewalks on Hamlet between 7th and 13th was noted in the Public Works paperwork that they were staking that out. The stakes were like 13 feet back. I just wanted to clarify that. My intent was just standard sidewalks. I didn't think we're going to put double sidewalks there like Main Street. Is that correct?
They're actually 15 feet. That's pretty close.
Okay.
We're allowing a contractor a 15-foot wide area to work to build 5-foot sidewalks.
So it's just going to be a standard 5-foot sidewalk then?
Correct. They just
okay.
need the room to work.
I gotcha. Okay.
Charles?
It's the hose bib sticking out the side.
It's not necessarily the hose bib. I think it's the valve. So a lot of them steal the knobs right off them and it creates a spike.
Yeah.
If the knob were stayed on them, it wouldn't be as bad. But they
we'll look at it.
going to say we put rubber over them or something, but they just take that off too, so that won't help. So I guess you'll figure it out. Okay, any other new business? Okay, Mayor's notes. I also would like to thank the Centennial Committee. Well, they were involved in a very successful Centennial. I mean, it was a blast. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I had my grandkids there, and they were talking and smiling, and, you know, I even shared a little bit in one of my speeches about them. They just thought that was the funnest thing in the world to go to. I'd like to thank Ken Kaler for his involvement, of course, and Ken Johnson and Debbie and Rebecca, and Dan Deaver was very involved in it. They put a lot of hours, and I know there's a lot more people than this, so this is, you know, the ones that are just sitting right here. I don't know if I missed anybody, plus the police department, but very successful. You know, I wish we didn't have the wind, but that's Othello. So, but it was a lot of fun. So, Park and Recreation Committee meets Wednesday at 4. So that's council members Darrow, Snyder, and Garcia. And do they want to change to noon? That's a question I have here. Stay at 4, or you want to go back to noon? So you cannot do 4. Okay.
It doesn't matter to me. I can do
it. Doesn't matter to you. Mark?
Noon's good.
Who's here? Darrell, Snyder. So noon's good? Okay. So we're going to switch it to noon.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. The county is putting together a local emergency planning committee. LAPC chief and Amon sit on this committee. The main purpose is to protect the community through awareness of potential accident and disaster, such as an ammonia spill. They will meet quarterly on the third Wednesday at 10 a.m. at the hospital. Do any council members want to serve on that committee?
Now, I got a question for the chief. Chief Dunninger, is that the same one that me and you went to last time, or that we got coming up?
No.
Okay.
This is more through the county, the sheriff's office, the emergency
Wednesday.
I was the director of
JV. Brand new committee.
Is this the one you asked me to sit on?
Yes.
I guess I'll accept.
Okay.
You said your calendar was full, so I
think. Well, he just emptied it, so it's Ken Kaler.
It's on the record.
Yep, it's on the record. Yeah, gotta be careful when you say yes. You ought to know that by now.
I know that. Seasoned up, though. I got rid of part of the Centennial, so.
Oh, okay. Okay, there's a lot of skateboard use on the new basketball surface. The surface is wearing off, so we're going to have increased enforcement has been requested. So I guess there's signs posted also, but I guess we're going to try to help educate the skateboarders the reason why they can't use the skateboard part or the basketball surface. So you're aware of it. Also, there's our workshop on June 7th. It's important everybody realize it's 6 o'clock. Okay? It's going to be very full, a lot of education. The whole workshop's going to be education. What are public records? Social media, do's and don'ts for elected officials. Example, our computers will be given to us, our laptops. Roles of the mayor and council and our insurance carrier, WCIA, will have an attorney who will do a 2-hour presentation to make sure that we understand, because we're entering into a whole new world here. And things can happen. We've also, WCIA has invited Warden. They have 4 coming. They've invited Connell because they're part of the insurance carrier system. Othello School District will be here, part of their people, we believe. And afterwards, the port might have one person here. So you see, we're inviting the communities around us to be involved because this is something all of us needs to know because, like I said, it's new ground for us. And afterwards, we receive a certificate of training. Afterwards, all of us will receive that. So plan on being here 3.5 hours probably. Hopefully, we'll have it done by then. So,
that's the next workshop?
Yeah, that's next workshop, June 7th at 6 o'clock. June 7th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, 2 weeks. There's no council meeting next Monday. It's a holiday, either Tuesday, either usually move forward, but this is a 5th Monday. So, no, it'll be the first of the month, won't it?
Pardon me?
Yeah, it's the last Monday of the month, so.
Right.
Yeah. So other than that, I guess this meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.